It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. There are many of us who dread the winter months, the cold, the ice, the snow, the darkness. This hour is about those who love the winter and can't wait for the snow to fly every year. I'll talk with a number of people who know how to get the best out of the season, and we'll also get some advice on how to enjoy winter from people who live in a place where the winter is longer and darker than ours, Denmark. But first, Iowa is lacking in cliffs and waterfalls, but that hasn't deterred ice climber Don Briggs, who's also a health and physical education instructor at the University of Northern Iowa. About 14 years ago, he had a brilliant idea to turn unused silos into cliffs of ice in the wintertime. Hello, Don.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Tell me how this idea came to you.
Well, it was an accident, kind of. The year 2000, I was helping a farmer, a local farmer, but west of town here, chisel plow his ground in the fall, and kept going back and forth. And as I was, you know, it's kind of a monotonous job, but I looked over to his farmstead, and he had four silos that were just standing there. And my thoughts were, you know, I could rock climb those, I could scale those. And then I kept driving, and I thought, well, it's getting cold. And then I went, wait a minute, I wonder if we could ice them up and then do some ice climbing, because I had just gotten into ice climbing about 2 or 3 years before that. And the closest place we, at that time, we knew about was out in Colorado at a place called Ouray. And so I went out to Ouray and asked them, you know, how do you make ice? How do you get it? And they said, well, you need two ingredients. You need cold temperatures and you need water. And I said, we got plenty of both in Iowa. So we asked the farmer. And he said, yeah, go ahead, because he doesn't use them anymore. And he said, even if you damage them, it's not gonna bother me at all. So we took a garden hose and ran it up one silo and shot it across to the other silo. And lo and behold, we were just lucky. I think back on that a lot, like how lucky we were that it formed up really good enough so we were able to ice climb it. And there was about five or six of us that, you know, we like to ice climb together and just kind of a small community. Well, it's on 27th Street, just west of town here, and which is a pretty busy highway. And try and hide that, you know, from people seeing it. And we had a lot of people stop and want to know what we're doing. And then other people were ice climbers, and they want to know if they could come climb on it. So it's really exploded. And any given weekend, we've got 30 to 75 people coming out. Wow. To climb on the silo.
So the first time you just used a garden hose and had a cascade of water. Is there more of a science to it now? You said you got lucky that time.
Oh, yes. We've gotten really technical with it. We have sprayers now that we pull up. We're still using garden hoses, but we attach a garden hose to a sprayer. Then we pull that up, and then we have guide wires on the side that where we can place the water or the spray wherever we want it. And we have sprayers that are for 26 to maybe 8 or 10 degrees. And then we've got certain sprayers that are more, we put more volume on the silo for anything that's colder than 0 degrees, you know, like that minus 24 that we had last week was we had the biggest sprayers we could get. So it
you were out
up.
Spraying water when it was minus 24?
Yes, we were. Yeah. We're having fun. You know, you dress properly, it's not a big deal.
Right, whatever. So when you get out your sprayers and add water, add ice to what you already have, are you trying to create a certain texture or a certain shape, or is it just whatever happens?
Well, we're trying to keep it up. When I say keep it up, the each time, you know, like example, today's Monday. Yesterday we had probably 30 people out at the silo climbing, and they knock a lot of the ice off.
And it was warm yesterday.
Yes, yes. But anytime they climb, a lot of people knock down the ice, and so we would just rejuvenate it and build it back up again to where it was. And it gets pretty thick on the side of the silo. It'll get at the top maybe 2 or 3 feet thick, and at the bottom 8 to 12 feet thick We have some pretty big chunks of ice on the silo.
Now, I know that people go ice climbing in many other places. You mentioned Colorado, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I'm sure many, many, many other places people go ice climbing. But compare climbing a silo that you have intentionally put ice on to climbing a cliff or even a waterfall.
Compare it. It's I tell people if you can climb the silo, you can climb almost anywhere in the world. And the reason being is because, you know, we have an 80-foot silo that we spray down, and so we've got 70 feet of vertical ice, which makes it very, very difficult. And I personally have climbed in Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, Colorado, and Canada, and then ventured over to Nepal and done some ice climbing over there. And I still keep coming back to the most difficult place I've ever climbed is the silo because it's pure vertical, whereas a waterfall, you know, cascades down and kind of has some different levels, and it's not as difficult going up. Now, it's longer. Like, I just was out in Colorado last week climbing, and there were some climbs that were 140 feet long or 140 feet high, but it wasn't as difficult as the silo.
Wow. What kind of equipment do you need to go ice climbing for those of us who've never climbed anything that's covered in ice?
Well, if you come to our place, we have all the equipment you need. The only thing that you need to bring is warm weather gear or cold weather gear and whatever you're going to be wearing outside. And then what we actually do is we tell people just take one layer off because when you're climbing, you're going to be sweating. You're going to be exerting some energy and so we don't want them to sweat too badly. But we have crampons to put on the boots. We have the boots. We have ice axes. We provide harnesses, helmets, and safety glasses for all the people. And we also have the ropes that are already strung up to the top of the silo and back down. Which
is a tremendous advantage, I would think, of ice climbing on silos. It's pretty easy to connect those ropes.
Correct. We have very good anchors at the top, and we've had a couple of ice climbing experts come in and check our setup to make sure that it's safe and it's nobody's going to get hurt.
How many people have you had coming out? You mentioned on the weekend a certain number, but do you have an idea of how many people have been up and down this silo?
Well, we've been doing this for 14 years now, and we average about 250 people a year. And the reason I know that is because we do ask the people that do climb to sign a waiver, and I usually count the waivers up at the end of the year, and we've had as many as 300, and on a slack year, we had probably 175.
Why do you think people enjoy this so much?
It's a challenge. It's a great workout. It's a great opportunity to be outside. And the thing that I think we have at the venue of the silo is that we have a warming house to go with it. So if you do get cold, you can walk about 10 yards and go into a nice warm facility and get a cup of hot chocolate, cup of tea, or a cup of hot Tang and kick back and relax and chat with the other climbers.
You've also turned this into a class for you and I, right?
Correct. And as a matter of fact, at 1 o'clock today, I'll be talking to the very first class of the second of this year and getting that class has 18 people currently enrolled in it. And then I have another class that meets on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock, and that class has 15 people enrolled.
How long have you been doing the class?
Oh gosh, we started the class probably about, I'm going to say 9 or 10 years ago.
And what do you think your students take away from it?
I think what I've seen is a lot of them continue to ice climb, and they're glad that they've taken it here because they have come back and said, you know, I've climbed in Alaska, I've climbed, you know, out in Colorado, and you're right, this is the hardest place to climb. And part of our objective is in the hypos division is to prepare people for later life and give them a lifetime activity. So I think this is definitely a lifetime activity. I know I enjoy it, and I've had like I said, a lot of students come back and tell me how much they enjoyed getting involved in it.
Now, for the last couple of winters, around this time in January, I know I've been outside in short sleeves and capri pants a couple of winters in a row. Not this year, but have you had winters in the recent years where you just couldn't do this?
Yes, we've had 2 years ago. We had a winter that we were we only had 2 weekends that we could do any ice climbing. So, and I heard you say at the start of the show that some people hate winter and hate the ice and all that, but it's, and you're right, we look forward to it. But two years ago when it was warm, I saw a lot of people smiling, and they're like, oh gee, we really felt bad for you. but we're happy that it's warm.
So it did bring a lot of people joy. Have you seen a lot of copycat ice climbing on silos going on over the last 14 years? Are a lot of people taking inspiration from your idea?
Yeah, I have. I had some people, first of all, out in Pennsylvania, give me a call and ask me, how to do it and all that. And then there were two people in Iowa that one person down by Tipton and another person up in the northwest part of the state that have called me and asked me how to do it. And then the guy that called from Tipton said, you should write a book on this, so on how to do it. So I actually did that. And then this last fall, I had two different individuals from Wisconsin call me and ask me, how do you go about doing this? So I even met with them at their farm and looked to check their silo out and make sure everything was going to be safe for them. They weren't going to spray down an old dilapidated silo that would fall down.
Right. Right. Well, Don, I'm not going to wish you many more weeks of cold, but I hope you get some more good climbing in.
Well, thanks a lot. We'd love to keep winter going till May.
No, thank you. Don Briggs is a health and physical education instructor at the University of Northern Iowa. He's also the author of Silo Ice Climbing in the Midwest, and he is the inventor of ice climbing on silos. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to head to the skating rink. Later on this hour, I'll talk with an ice sculptor, and then we'll also find out the secret to happiness in Denmark, where the winters are longer and darker than ours are. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking with people who know how to get the most out of the winter months. And later in the hour, we'll get some tips on winter happiness straight from the happiest nation in the world, Denmark, where the winters are longer and darker than ours. But first, thanks to modern technology, you don't actually have to brave the cold to go ice skating. This is the season for skating, though, and Burton Powley is a figure skating coach in Coralville and Des Moines. He's a choreographer and owner of the Ice Ridge in Des Moines and an accomplished figure skater in his own right, including a 10-time U.S. figure skating national champion. Hello, Burton.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. When did you first start skating? You grew up in Des Moines, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Des Moines, and I started roller skating at a young age, and then I quickly became national champion and then switched to ice skating.
You were a roller skating national champion?
Yes, I was a roller skating champion prior to ice skating.
Well, I didn't even know we had those.
Oh, yes, they do. They have competitions in roller and ice skating, both.
All right. So where did you first start ice skating?
I first started ice skating in Houston, Texas at the Galleria Mall.
And then?
And then I moved to Australia.
Wow.
And I skated down there, and I owned a rink. And then I moved back to Des Moines and opened up a skating rink. And I started teaching in the Coralville Ice Arena back about 9 years ago. And then about a year ago, I got the idea of opening up my own rink here again in Des Moines.
Now, how old were you when you started ice skating, when you made the switch?
Oh, I was about 13.
Okay. So you weren't one of these tiny kids that we see out on the ice today, but you were still young.
Oh, I was still young. I was in middle school at the time.
And did you have Olympic dreams then when you made that switch?
Oh, yeah, I always used to watch it on TV with my mother and always had the idea that I could accomplish those goals at one point.
Now, when did you first start teaching lessons?
I've been coaching for 22 years now.
When you see kids come out on the ice, and of course, you know, there are at any given day at an ice rink, and you teach in Coralville. So on that rink on a Saturday morning, there are, what, 5 or 6 different lessons going on all at the same time. What is your specialty? Who do you work with?
Well, I kind of like working with the younger kids because they deserve to have a top-rated coach right from the beginning to get them started off properly and to get the love of the sport into them. I like to encourage them to a healthy lifestyle with a positive attitude and good fitness and be a good role model. So I do a lot of demonstrations and show them a lot of tricks, and they get excited by watching that.
Where do you start? I mean, when kids get out there on the ice, it can be pretty daunting. Not everybody is a roller skating champion to begin with, to give them those skills. How do you get them comfortable on the ice?
Well, they start out in a basic skills program with a coach, most likely. They come out very dressed warmly if they're in a regular ice skating rink. On a synthetic ice rink like I have in the Southridge Mall, they don't have to dress warm, so it's a lot better for the little kids there, so they get a much quicker start there. On a traditional rink, they have to bundle up, and they have to have gloves and mittens and hats, and that's why the ice ridge is so popular, because the little kids don't have to be cold and wet when they fall down.
And tell me about synthetic ice. I mean, how is it different? Well, as far as the skating experience.
Yeah, well, it's a revolutionary synthetic polymer that they use a lot in professional shows in Las Vegas and on cruise ships, and it's very safe to skate on. It's about 90% as slippery as real ice, and it's not cold, it's not wet, and there's a polymer that you can, a silicone that you can spray on top of the rink to actually make it more slippery, and the kids just love it, and the parents like it. They can sit ringside without being cold and wet, and They just are really embracing the idea now. They're really starting to get to know where we're at.
And you were inspired to start Ice Ridge because you saw the synthetic ice in action, right?
Well, yes, I was skating on it in a show in Las Vegas, and then they actually asked me to be a spokesperson for their product. So I started promoting it, and I got to thinking, well, why don't I own some of this stuff? You know, this would be great for kids. It takes no electricity, no utilities, no water. It's safe for kids. It's portable. I can move it from one place to another, and, you know, it's just safe all the way around.
Now, as somebody you've obviously spent a lot of time skating on real ice, and can you compare the experience to skating on synthetic ice? How is it different?
Well, of course, skating on real ice is preferred over synthetic ice because it's much faster. The conditions can vary greatly, especially if you're on an outdoor rink. You know, if you get the sun on it, then, or the wind, and, you know, the snow, rain, those all affect the conditions. The ability of the chiller and the Zamboni to groom the ice. Right after the Zamboni comes out and grooms the ice, it's very slippery, and it's very hard for beginners to skate on that. The championship-level skaters, of course, want the ice perfect and glistening smooth to do their moves faster and with less effort. On a synthetic ice rink, you have to push a little harder, but it gets you stronger and makes your legs will have to work a little bit more, but that's the advantage of one over the other.
Now, when you are working with some of those beginner kids and you see them catching on and getting comfortable out there on the ice, how do you spot a kid who has real talent?
I look for that little glimmer in their eye. I look for that gleam, and that's why I wanted to invite Mariah to come and talk today a little bit. I hope she can hear me there.
Yeah, she'll be on in just a second.
Well, if I can brag on her a little bit, she was the recipient of an Adidas sponsorship, which is actually for someone that to help provide assistance to their skating. And it was based upon her attitude and her training methods and her the way that she approaches her skating.
Well, let's bring Mariah on. Mariah Grassi is one of your students. She's an 11-year-old figure skater from Iowa City. Hello, Mariah.
Hi, Mariah.
Thank you for being here. And Mariah, you've been skating since you were 4 years old. When did you start taking figure skating lessons, going beyond the basics?
I started skating with Burton when I was about 5 years old, I think.
Wow. And Burton, did you see Mariah and see that glimmer and pick her out? Or was this just someone who showed up in one of your classes?
Well, she started in the classes. And actually, her grandmother, Heidi Nobling, she brought her to me and said that she had been observing me coaching for quite a while and thought that I would be a good match for her daughter or for her granddaughter.
And Mariah, your grandmother is also a figure skater, right?
Yes.
Did that influence you? Did that make you want to learn?
Yeah, I started a little bit before her, but I saw a lot of people skating and it looked pretty fun, so I started.
So, wait, your grandmother actually learned after you did?
Yes.
Wow. So maybe she was inspired by you.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you love about it? I mean, now you've competed all over the country. What do you love about ice skating?
It's just pretty fun to be with friends, and it's a lot of fun to, like, learn new things on ice.
What is your favorite trick to do on the ice?
Probably an axle.
All right. And you're working on a very difficult trick right now, right?
Yes.
What are you working on?
I'm working on a double sal, double loop.
Oh, wow. And that's the kind of thing we're going to see in the Olympics in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Now, Mariah, when did you decide that you wanted to not just have fun out on the ice with your friends and with your coach and learn some new things, but when did you decide that you wanted to be involved in competitions?
I was around 6. There was just a lot of people doing it, and I wanted to learn a routine. And I was in some skating shows there, but not competitions, and it kind of was really fun. So I just kind of started going into the competitions.
All right. And as I mentioned, you have traveled all over the country now to compete, right?
Yes.
Where's the most exotic, most exciting place you've been for a competition?
Probably Boston.
Wow. And how many hours are you spending skating every week now?
I don't really know. I usually do it on Wednesdays or Tuesdays and a Saturday, so.
All right, so 3 times a week probably?
Yeah, about 3 or 2.
Wow. And Burton, I know that you've said that ice skating, obviously it's great exercise. It helps kids develop balance and muscle coordination and all kinds of important things. For someone to go to Mariah's level and start spending 3 nights or 3 days a week on the ice and paying for coaches and paying for skates and paying for costumes and traveling to all these different competitions, obviously that can get to be really prohibitively expensive for a lot of kids. Does that frustrate you?
It does in some aspects, but if you have a strong figure skating club that has a good fundraising campaign behind them, and you structure the program so that the group of kids can participate, it helps to offset the costs for the overall families.
What do you think kids get out of learning that routine and competing?
Well, I'd like to think that I make a significant and positive influence over their actions and developments in the edge of life, not just on the field of play.
Okay, and how do you think you do that?
Well, I keep it fun. I try to, let them not be too serious about it, you know. Some coaches, their coaching style is a little bit more aggressive and a little more, you know, dominating, where I try to let the students feel their own way through the sport and find their own niche that best suits them, because everybody you teach is not going to be the next Olympic champion, but there's a lot of ways that they can express themselves and keep a healthy lifestyle and do those things that are very positive. So, I try to always look for the good things in their skating.
Well, Burton, can you give us an idea, when you are competing on the national level, how many hours a week were you spending on the ice?
When I was at my top level, I was probably on the ice at least 20 hours a week.
Wow. So it really was the primary focus.
Yes, it was. And I was in college at the time, full time, and I was working full time and skating. So I really didn't have much of a social life at that point.
Well, and we see that with the athletes who compete on the really elite level. It has to become their primary focus. Do you almost try to, it almost sounds like you try to protect kids from that a little bit?
Well, yeah, in a sense, if you know, nowadays, if you're going for if you're an elite athlete in an Olympic sport, you've got the whole sponsorship issues involved. It's almost like a business. You've got a team of coaches, you've got a choreographer, you've got a manager, you've got an agent, you know, and there's a lot of different aspects involved in it, you know. So you know, unless you're going to be the very, very top tier, you know, I try to keep it realistic and keep my goal for them is to be realistic and optimistic at the same time.
All right. And Mariah, I know that you have a competition coming up in the not too distant future that may not be in a very exotic location, but you're going to compete in the Winter Iowa Games, right?
Yes.
What will you be doing in the games this year?
I'm going to be doing an artistic freestyle compulsory spins and jumps routine.
All right. And do you have it all put together? I know it's coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm still working on some of the routines, but I think I've got them down pretty well.
Do you get to pick your own music to skate to?
Yeah, sometimes I do, but sometimes I let my coach pick them out too so he can figure out a good song for it.
All right, and what are you skating to this year?
I'm doing the Good Morning song and Spanish Steps.
Okay, and Good Morning, that's from the movie Singing on the Rain. You're Singing in the Rain, right?
Yes.
All right, and Spanish Steps, that's an instrumental?
Yeah.
All right, and which one's your favorite?
Probably Spanish Steps.
How many times have you been in the Winter Games in Iowa?
About 6 or 7.
Wow, so you've been doing that competition almost since you started skating.
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
It's just kind of fun to get to know other people and watch their routines to see how they do and to also see how you do your routine also.
All right. And Burton, do you send a lot of your students to the Iowa Winter Games?
Oh, yes, I do. I've had probably 200 students over the last 6 years that have been competing there. I've got about 12 kids that are competing in this year's state games or the Iowa games.
What do you like about that competition?
Well, I like it because it's very friendly, you know, and it's an Olympic-style sports festival, so it simulates what they would actually be doing if they were in a higher-level competition. It gives them a lot of experience in front of judges, and because it's local, it does keep the cost down, you know, so they don't have to travel out of state.
And do you, when you go and you watch, obviously you see your students who you believe have real talent, but do you see some really stiff competition there?
Oh, yes. Iowa is, you know, they don't really expect to see top skaters from Iowa, but in 2010, my team, the Capital Ice Academy from Des Moines and Coralville, they took the President's Trophy at the World Championships in Boston.
Wow.
So we have a boy, Jinsu from the Hawkeye Skating Club, that made the Nationals this year. And then Tim LaDuce from Cedar Rapids actually was just edged out of the pairs competition to make a berth for the Olympic team. He was, unfortunately, I think they finished 4th or 5th place this year. So he was very close. But, yeah, we do have a lot of good skaters here in Iowa.
Do you see the Iowa growing as sort of a force in figure skating?
I do, but there needs to be a more opportunity for them to get ice time because Des Moines in particular is a very hockey-oriented city, and I can appreciate that. The sport is a great sport, and, you know, I like all aspects of skating, whether it's hockey or figure skating. But, you know, skating at 5 o'clock in the morning is not very conducive for a good training. So that's
right.
Part
or
of the reason I opened this
school.
New training center.
Right.
Yeah, well, they've got to go to school. You know, they get sleep deprived. The parents get aggravated at that time of the morning. So, you know, I try to that's what part of what I was opening this new training facility in Southridge at the Ice Ridge was to give the figure skaters an opportunity to be the first go.
And do you keep the hockey players off that ice?
Oh, no, they come out. We have a little hockey set up, and you know, and they use it for training as well, you know, so we're not exclusive just for figure skaters, but you know, of course, as a figure skating coach, that is my number one focus.
Right. And do you still compete, Burton?
Yes, I am. I will be competing at the U.S. Nationals in Boston in April.
Oh, wow. So is that hard to balance your training with training all of these young people as well?
Yes, I'm usually last on the list. But it's funny because, you know, as I'm out there, I always teach with my skates on. And when I'm demonstrating something, I always show them, you know, I'm trying to be exact how I do it, you know, so I'm not showing them a mistake or they pick up my bad habits.
Right. So you can fit a little bit of practice in when you're coaching, too,
but it's
right?
Kind of like when you're typing. Yeah, if you're typing the home row, on a typewriter, you're doing the basics over and over and over again. So then when I want to go do a triple jump, it's right there. You know?
All right. Well, Mariah, thank you so much for being here today. Mariah Grassi is one of Burton Pally's students, and she'll be competing next in the Iowa Winter Games. Mariah, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Burton Pally, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
Burton Pally is a figure skating coach in Coralville and Des Moines. He is choreographer and owner of the Ice Ridge in Des Moines, and certainly an accomplished figure skater in his own right. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about ice sculpting. And then later on, we're going to talk about a little secret of the Danes to keeping themselves happy and well through long, dark, cold winters. It's called hygge. We'll talk about it in a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last week, it was pretty hard to get outside and enjoy winter, but now that the polar vortex has passed, we're spending this hour talking with people who really take advantage of winter in Iowa. Ron Hall is executive chef at Mercy Hospital in Iowa City, but today we're talking to him because he's also an ice sculptor. Hi, Ron.
Good afternoon.
When did you start making ice sculptures?
You know, I've been doing ice sculptures on and off for about 40 years. So yeah, I'm pretty much a senior here, and I started very early in the kitchen, and I've been doing them for many years.
What got you interested in doing them?
Well, you know, I was working in the kitchen, and I saw one being done. It was somebody came from the outside and did one because no one at the restaurant knew how, and I just thought it was very, very cool looking thing. I mean, literally cool, and I'd like to be able to try that and kind of, you know, ask around and got started on it.
What was the first one you made?
Yeah, the first one was a basket with a snake coming out of it. And, you know, in my mind, I had this great elaborate-looking thing, and it ended up looking like a bucket with a bent post in it. It really looked bad, but I guess that's how you learn.
How did you learn? Did you have a mentor?
No, actually, it was one other person that had not had any experience as well, and the two of us just kind of, you know, partnered with each other and just had at it.
So now you not only make ice sculptures for people who hire you to do that, but you end up being part of many winter events in Iowa. You have Winterfest coming up at the Amana Colonies pretty soon. How many ice sculptures do you end up doing during a winter?
Well, normally the Amanas is 3 ice sculptures. This year it's going to be 2. And then I do at Coralville for their Winterfest, and that will be 2 blocks of ice as well. And then I did the Iowa City had a Winterfest this year, and I did 3 blocks for that. So it all kind of runs about the same general time, you know, within a month or so, and 'tis the season.
Walk me through the process from start to finish. You have a block of ice.
Right,
what happens?
This is, you know, a block of ice is 300 pounds. It's 20 by 40 inches, and it's, you know, rectangle shape, and it's 10 inches thick. In the real cold weather like we have now, if I'm doing them outside, there's no need to temper the ice. You don't have not so much a concern for it cracking on you because, it's, you know, the ice isn't going to get any colder, get any hotter. And I can take a chainsaw and start right away cutting on it, and I have no problem at all other than it is literally rock hard because of the weather. If it's, you know, maybe 25, 30 degrees out and I'm doing them, then I've got to be careful. I take it out of the freezer that I don't start too soon and have it crack on me.
And before you take the chainsaw to it, how detailed is your plan?
I take a picture, either one that I've seen online or something that I draw, put it on a computer, enlarge it to the size of the block of ice. You know, I will tape the pieces of paper together. And it's a template or a pattern, and I put that on the side of the block with a little bit of water so it sticks. And so then I can visually see what I'm going to do, and then I take a chainsaw and cut away the outside part, and then little by little cut away into the inside, and then I'm kind of on my own.
What kind of tools do you use once you put the chainsaw away? Obviously, you need some finer detail tools.
I do, but, you know, about 80 to 90% of it is done with a chainsaw, for me anyway. I do have a set of ice chisels, and then I have an electric router that I can use to do a little detailing work with, and that's for the most part is it.
How long does it take you from start to finish?
Well, the actual carving itself will take about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on the weather.
What are you planning on carving for Winterfest at the Amana Colonies?
At the Amana, I think I'm going to do a parrot on a perch, and the other, I believe, is going to be, I'm kind of tossed between maybe an eagle or a bowl with a couple birds sitting on each side of the bowl.
Once you get something done that you're proud of, is it hard to know that it's not going to last?
Yeah, that's, you know, there's some real instant gratification. You know, it's, you know, you do it, and it's just for a very short period of time. If it's, if I'm doing it for a wedding or something, I carve it, I put it away, and I'm not even there for the wedding. So I just know that somebody else is going to take a picture of it, and feel it, and touch it, and get something out of that. But then it just gets thrown away outside. Yeah, so it's very short to time frame that you get to enjoy that.
What's the most requested sculpture that you have?
If I'm doing a wedding or something like that, usually it's a swan. Mm-hmm. Probably the more popular one. I do get some kind of unusual ones. I've had weddings that someone's wanted a bust of Superman. Somebody that wanted a farmer and wanted a steer head. You just never know for sure what they're going to want.
So you told us about the first one that you made that didn't turn out very well. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first sculpture that you did where when you got done you thought, wow, I really nailed that?
Well, just here recently with the Coralville Winterfest, the Iowa City one, we did a groupie of snowflakes, you know, smaller snowflakes, and then stacked them on top of each other, kind of fused them together. And that turned out very well. I liked the way that turned out, and I did something similar in Coralville a couple of years ago with some smaller statues of eagles and stacked them on top of each other with, you know, the wings of the bottom two and then another one on top of that. Those turned out pretty well. So I'm kind of exploring that part where I take pieces of ice and put together and get the negative space around there as part of the overall.
What's the ideal temperature for ice carving?
Lower 20s would be pretty nice. You know, it's not melting on you, and it's not, you know, terrible working conditions, and the ice gives you a little time to work without it melting.
Did you like winter before becoming an ice sculptor?
No, I still don't.
You did. It hasn't changed your mind.
No.
All right. Well, Ron, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're very welcome.
Ron Hall is an ice sculptor who lives in Cedar Rapids.